York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, since many of you are on holiday, I decided to take this opportunity to share some very important insights from other individuals, including Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and Mike Wallace on 60 Minutes, all dealing with the same theme, vaccinations, and all dealing with the fact that what we've been told about the safety and efficacy and the need requirement mandating vaccines should be challenged. Here is the problem. Today, there is a worldwide campaign by the pharmaceutical industry, specifically those pharmaceutical companies that produce multiple vaccines, and especially those vaccines that are mandated, where you have no choice. You must take them, such as in New York and Maine and California. That there is no good science behind it, but there's a lot of good propaganda and politicking. We have received all of the information of the legislators in California who voted for the compulsory vaccinations, mandatory vaccinations, and how much money they received from the makers of those vaccines. Now, by any measure of accountability, that is considered pay-to-play or payola. It's corrupt. The fact that it's legal does not make it any less corrupt. It's just not actionable. But we should realize that the people saying, yes, we need to have every child vaccinated with Gardasil and other vaccines, they're not doing it because they have studied the scientific literature. They have spoken with independent physicians such as pediatricians who are expert in the field. Instead, they've been told by members of their legislative staff or by members of the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, at one of their secret annual or biannual meetings, this is what you vote for. This is what you vote against. This type of corruption permeates every single state legislature and the federal government as well. So for those parents who are all pro-vaccine, and remember, 7 million parents were pro-vaccine until there was something happened to their child. Then they did their homework. This is also true of many pediatricians having seen their own children damaged by vaccines and initially not believing it was possible the vaccine was responsible until they did their homework. And then they were angered. And part of their anger, having spoken with dozens of them, I'm referring to board-certified pediatricians, was that they should have known better. They should not have trusted the pharmaceutical promotion. They should have looked for the truth, and they didn't. So now the campaign is to attack them. The Washington Post, the New York Times, and other publications are attacking those who simply question the safety and efficacy and mandating vaccines. They are still not anti-vaccine. Andrew Wakefield is pro-vaccine. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is pro-vaccine. They just want safe vaccines. They want safe and effective vaccines. Well, who wouldn't if you could protect a child or an adult from a condition, but know in the process that the independent gold standard of double-blind placebo-controlled studies had proven the safety and efficacy of what you're giving? None of that has happened. None of it. But they have the power of the federal government on their side. They have the power of the media on their side. They have the power of corporate interests on their side, including Wall Street and Big Pharma. So it is an almost insurmountable task to educate people about the truth about vaccines. But we're going to try to do that, and today is just one example. So we're going to hear first from Dr. Secondly, we're going to take, after each one, we're going to take just a short music break and go right back in. The second one will be Dr. Andrew Wakefield, or Robert F. Kennedy first, Andrew Wakefield second, and Mike Wallace in 60 Minutes third. Continue with an enjoyable holiday. but this is important information we need to know. Please share it with other individuals.
Have. This is a crazy vaccine. This is their own. Half the girls in the Gardasil 49.5 and half the girl, more than half the girls in the aluminum adjuvant had serious, this is like hospitalizations. Nobody would do this. It's crazy. Okay, now I've told you that pre-licensing, there is no testing because they don't have to do it. But we can all say to ourselves, at least after the vaccine is licensed, we're going to see vaccine injuries. And you know what? I'm going to do it after.
Press conference I'm going to do whenever this. You're ready.
We only have a half hour where they're going to stream. They're not streaming until the press conference starts.
They'll stream when you start doing the press conference. And they're all here for you to do the press conference.
Okay. So I should quit now.
Do you want to quit now?
Okay. Just getting warmed up. The best is yet to come.
We've been live streaming everywhere else, but the State House is going to start live streaming now.
And they might kill it at Minnesota.
Yep. If there's any members of the press, should we call them forward?
Yeah, they're right here.
I think all the members of the press are here.
Jeffrey Jackson?
Before I get started, I just want to make a few more introductions. We have several legislators in the room. I don't want to miss any of you. Representative Candelora. Representative Hennessy. Representative Wilson. Representative Mastro Francesco. Representative Belinsky. There were others here as well. I know DeFinius Wilson, Rep. DeFinius Wilson was in here. And Representative Hayes was in here. Did I miss anybody? I want to make sure I give them all credit for coming. Who? Representative Wood, we're also in here. We also have in this room medical professionals, doctors, APRNs, researchers that are all here to on vaccines. That was the dialogue we planned for today, and unfortunately that changed, and we appreciate Robert Kennedy Jr. coming all the way out from California, 3,000 miles. So many of those of you in this room have experienced children with vaccine injuries, and we know that this is a public health situation, right? So you wanted to hear facts, you wanted to hear them from those that were supposed to be here, but we are here today and we will let Robert speak a little bit and we'll all take a turn. But thank you all for being in this room and we'll continue.
Good morning, it's a pleasure to be here. To speak at this press conference and to begin the dialogue about vaccines. One of my concerns, having served on the Public Health Committee, is the fact that we're seeing bill proposals outside of the public hearing process. And unfortunately, the only way we're left to respond is to create our own forums and have our own conversation. So this morning there was a forum scheduled where we would have had both sides of the issue present their information. And unfortunately, the other side of the issue arrogantly did not show up to present their position. And I say arrogantly because the rules in our building are established for a reason. You propose a bill, we vote to hear that bill, and then we invite the public to come and speak. The only bills that have been raised in these committees have been bills that are trying to restrict a person's right to choose medical procedures. And sadly, the opposite bills to open the discussion about free choice has been squashed. And the concern that we have right now is we're going to embark on a potential elimination of a religious exemption without the ability of the public to come in and give their side of the story. And I think that's what prompted Robert Kennedy to come here today to start the dialogue and bring attention to this issue. And I'm very grateful that he's here to do that. And so with that, though, I want to turn it over to also to Representative Hannity to give his words, who also serves on the Public Health Committee. Jack.
Thank you, Vinny. I just want to be really quick because I want to get Kennedy back here to speak to the press questions. But I just want to say that this is not a partisan issue. This is a health issue. As we have heard, this is a health crisis. And I'm asking the legislature, both Republicans and Democrats, to come together to get the facts and then make decisions on that. And hopefully then we won't be considering passing bills to take away First Amendment rights. Thank you.
Oh yes. Let's take questions and answers or questions from the audience. And you want to come up, Robert?
Press. Press.
Oh, the press. I'm sorry.
Sure. Representative Candelora, would you suggest to your constituents that they not vaccinate their children?
I would suggest that we allow for our continuing exemptions to be in place, that people have a right to choose. I'm not a medical doctor. I chose to vaccinate my children. We chose not to give our children the HPV vaccine. And those were our decisions to make, and I think everybody has that right to make a decision. But to suggest, you know, in particular with the HPV vaccine, because we do have a bill in committee that's going to be mandating that vaccine for anybody in ninth grade. And the fact of the matter is that the contraction of the HPV virus, part of it is behavioral, but it's not a communicable disease that poses a public health threat. And so to suggest now that we're going to embark on mandating vaccines that don't pose public health threats is so far outside the scope of what we should be doing here. And I think we need to put the brakes on that. And I'm particularly alarmed that, again, we're going to be doing this and potentially eliminating a religious exemption without so much of a public hearing. That's unprecedented. I do believe the HPV vaccine is dangerous. You know, I think there is a health risk, as we saw today, 2.3% of the people that receive them, and that's why it should be a parent's choice. Again, looking at other vaccines, people that testified in the committee, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a scientist, but people do have autoimmune reactions. And so one of the bills I put in earlier in this session, what I wanted to see was informed consent for the parents, making sure that parents understand this process of vaccinations. And frankly, if your child has an autoimmune response to anything, doctors should be appropriately addressing that issue. And we seem to gloss over what the after effects could be and how you address them. But telling a parent, just give them an aspirin and move along, or give them a Tylenol and move on, isn't good health practice. So I think there's a lot more discussion that we should be having on this issue. But certainly, like I said, everybody has a right to vaccinate their children, just as everybody has a right to exercise a religious exemption.
Can you explain your approach to how the public should engage with scientists?
Okay. Yes. Do you identify who you're with, please?
Oh, sure. I'm Mark Pasniewicz. I'm a reporter with the Connecticut Mirror here in the Capitol.
You want to go up to the mic, though?
Yeah. Right. For me.
For you, sir. Yeah. You've been pretty outspoken on climate change, and you've asked the public at times to have faith in the scientific consensus on climate change. On this issue, you know, I was here for all your remarks. You have challenged the scientific consensus. So, how do you reconcile those two things? What guidance can you give to the average person who's trying to trying to struggle with things like climate change and this vaccine issue as to what faith they should place in scientific consensus.
Yeah, good question. What reporters and everybody needs to understand, there's a huge difference between the scientific establishment and an established science. Established science is not what CDC says, and it's not what Merck says. Established science is what's on PubMed in peer-reviewed publications, and that's the science that the Institute of Medicine looks at. And as I'm going to show in this study, in this PowerPoint, the Institute of Medicine, which is the arbiter, the congressionally appointed arbiter for what is science and what is not science, is with me on this issue. So if you want to know what established science is, look at the Institute of Medicine. Don't ask CDC. CDC is a vaccine company. CDC, 50% of CDC's budget goes to selling and promoting vaccines. CDC owns 57 vaccine patents. It collects money on them. FDA gets 75% of its budget from the industry. FDA owns part of the Gardasil patent. It gets money every time somebody buys a $420 shot at a series of Gardasil. FDA makes money. Not only that, but individuals within FDA who worked on the patent at $150,000 a year in royalties. And these are the division chairs, powerful people in that agency. Reporters, you know, I learned from my dad, don't trust people in authority. People in authority lie. You know, the press was supposed to have learned this, at least in the Iraq War, if they didn't learn it in Vietnam and any others. I've sued EPA many times for lying about climate science and forcing them to start doing real science on it. This is the same thing as the climate. You have an industry that is creating, the same thing as tobacco. There's an industry that is minting and creating phony studies. The problem is that the pharmaceutical companies have much more power with the press than do the oil companies or the tobacco companies, because is the biggest advertiser. You look at, Roger Ailes told me this. He said, look at one of my news shows. I have 22 ads on, you know, on an evening news show, and 17 of them are paid for by pharma. And he said, if I put this issue on one of my shows, I would get a call from Rupert in 10 minutes. And if you look at, you know, there's a censorship in the press. We're not allowed to talk about this. The press is just repeating pharma talking points. You're not showing us a study. What I said, I went to the press club last year with Robert De Niro, and I said, I will pay $100,000 to any member of the press who can give me a single study that indicates that it's safe to inject mercury into a baby. $100,000. Me and Bob De Niro said that. And I can show you hundreds of studies that say it's not. So you gotta learn to mistrust CDC. You can't keep trusting them and writing down what they say. You gotta look at what IOM actually says, and I'm gonna show you that in a minute.
In the U.S. right now, in 35 states. Can you comment on the censorship across all social media as well as Amazon Marketplace?
I mean, it's a bizarre thing that, I mean, I grew up, I guess I don't see civics class anymore, but, you know, I grew up with the axiom that you can't have a democracy if you don't have free debate. That free debate, no matter how controversial the issue, you gotta have free debate. You gotta be able to talk about it. And people, you know, people say, oh, well, the CDC, you know, is an important institution. It wouldn't lie to us about health of children. But, you know, look what the Catholic Church did during the pedophile scandal. And look how the press collaborated with them. And there's a movie that I think won an Academy Award, you know, the one about the Boston Globe, that was all about the press collaboration in covering up it because they believed the institution was more important than these little children who were getting injured. They were able to convince themselves that. And today, people in the press have to be guarded about not persuading themselves that CDC and the vaccine program are so important that we can't entertain criticism about it. That's the mistake everybody made with the pedophile scandal. We can't talk about it because people will lose faith in this important institution. It's so important that we talk about it. And what the heck are the Democrats going to these powerful, powerful, multinational, you know, titans like Jeff Zuckerberg and Jeff and Bezos and saying to them, you have to stop criticism of a pharmaceutical product. It's and the mainstream press is letting them get away with that, of demanding censorship, of criticism, about corruption. About corruption at public agencies. We're not allowed to talk about that now on social media. We're not allowed to talk about these women here who all have children. Raise your hand if you have a child or family member that was injured by a vaccine.
$500,000 to recover.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, this isn't a people's imagination. It's happening. And, you know, and you have to ignore, you have to say these women are all hysterics. And it's the time in history that both the press and the Democratic Party start listening to women. And it's the time. It's the time that the Democratic Party starts reminding itself of its central plank over the past two decades, my body, my choice. Whatever happened to that?
I had a follow-up to the Gardasil issue. It's my understanding several states or countries have banned the Gardasil vaccine. And yet, even though it is not common for people to have serious side effects, it does happen. And it's my understanding that you have some information that may shed some light on why this is being pushed so heavily in this country when there are risks out there. So can you share that?
Yeah, I'm about to show a PowerPoint that shows why Gardasil is on the market, and I'm doing it all with documents that we got from Merck or from the public agencies.
Do you have concerns about
Gardasil? My concern about Gardasil is this: we're seeing a huge injury rate from Gardasil. And I'm representing people, you know, I represent one girl who was a high school athletic star, top in her class, and she got a Gardasil shot at age 15. She's been in a wheelchair ever since with seizures every 90 seconds. And this is typical. I have letters from people every week, videos of their children, all of them getting what they call ASIA, which is basically Gardasil syndrome. So we're seeing that, but I believe that every girl who gets a Gardasil shot is injured. I believe that you cannot, and this is just pure toxicology, you cannot inject those levels of aluminum into human beings and not damage them. They go into your brain, they may be getting dementia or Alzheimer's 20 years from now, but it'll come out. Now, Yale published a study 2017 that I was looking forward to talking to the professors about. Because that study by the Yale Medical School showed that people who were suffering, women who were suffering OCD or anorexia or anxiety or depression were much more likely to have been vaccinated than people who didn't. Oh, I think that we're seeing a tremendous amount of recorded injuries that are reported to the HMOs, and so we see them. But we're also, you know, you look at the articles that have come out recently, there's a whole generation of teenagers that are suffering a huge spike in depression. This was on CBS yesterday. We're seeing teenagers, who the suicide rates go up, many other injuries, and I think that it's up to CDC to show us some studies. They can't explain it. CDC said we can't explain why suddenly all these kids are suicidal, depressed, and anxious, and are losing executive function and can't deal with social situations. And if you look at animal models, that's exactly what happens to animals, dozens of animal models. That are injected with aluminum. You see the anxiety behaviors in them, and you see these strange behaviors and inability to function. What studies? CDC says it's looking for the reason. We can't find it. Why can't they look at Gardasil? Because you can't do this. It's a huge human experiment, society wide, without any safety testing. They suddenly inject an entire generation of teenagers with one of the most potent neurotoxins in the universe at huge levels of poison, much, much larger than EPA considers safe.
Based on risk and benefit analysis, is there any vaccine that you're comfortable saying yes? If I would vaccinate?
I'm not a doctor, so I don't recommend vaccines to people. What I say is all vaccines should undergo the same safety testing that we require for other drugs. That's all I'm asking. Is this radical? Is this radical? Is this something that you're not allowed to print? That vaccines ought to be safety tested like other drugs? They ought to be tested against placebo? It's not a radical idea. It's something I think most Americans would support. And that's all I'm asking. And you know what? If they did that, you know what I would do? I'd go back to being the chief attorney for Waterkeeper and suing Exxon and, you know, Texaco and all the bad guys, because I don't want to be doing this work. But they need to do their job. Now I know too much. That's my curse. I read this stuff and I can't unthink it.
I know you have a PowerPoint presentation, but succinctly, can you just explain where you have the numbers from on the Gardasil vaccine and how many?
All of my numbers on the Gardasil vaccine come from what they call the manufacturer's insert. The manufacturers, when they make a vaccine, are required by Congress to include an insert that shows not all the studies they did, but a typical example of the studies. So anybody can look up these studies and read them. The problem is nobody does it. And if you did it, you would never take the Gardasil vaccine, because nobody, those odds of a 2.3%, a 1 in 40 chance of getting an autoimmune disease within 6 months, nobody would make that bet.
How many are affected, you said? You said, is it 1 in 40? What's the exact number?
Oh, it's 2.3 out of 100 showed signs of autoimmune disease, but 50%. Showed some other major injury within 6 months. 50%. And the death rate in the vaccine trials was double the background rate. The miscarriage rate was 5 times the background rate. The reproductive injury rate was about 5 times the background rate in this country. So if you just go down through the manufacturer's insert, you see this stuff. Anybody can look it up, any doctor. But doctors don't look at it. They believe what CDC and AAP tell them. And you know, AAP is getting 80% of its income from these companies. And you know, it's an industry that makes a lot of money from vaccines.
Do you think that the doctors are also ruthless green nuts?
Okay, well, tell us, everybody, your name.
Hi, everybody. My name is Dr. Bob Zajac. I'm a board-certified pediatrician. And if it's okay, I'd like to tell you a little bit about myself. I have 8 kids. I have 15 years of training in what I'm about to talk to you about. My background is in child development, a 4-year degree. I was getting my PhD in special education 4 years before I surprised my wife with my desire to become a medical doctor. That added 7 more years. And then just for fun, I have a 2-year degree in master's in business administration, so 17 years. And happy to share some of that experience with you in my personal journey as it relates to vaccines and injuries of children.
You are seriously qualified.
I've been reading about this a lot. As you know, medical doctors don't have a lot of training in vaccines. We don't have a lot of training in anything in detail unless you become a specialist. I've been reading about vaccines since 2009, about an hour a day. I started reading about vaccines when I saw my patients getting hurt, and that was really hard for me. I didn't want to believe it. In 2003, you all, literally everyone would have hated me. Biggest jerk of a jerk doctor you ever would have met in 2003, biggest ego of any doctor I think that was ever created. And when I walked into my community, I told everybody how blessed you are that I'm here now. And in the next 2 years, I noticed that there was a separation in my patient population. There are patients that were seeing the local chiropractor that were healthier than my other patients, and they were doing some other things for their health other than just using medication for whatever condition they might have. They also had a lower vaccine uptake, and they were healthy, and that was really hard for me to recognize. My partially or unvaccinated patients, and none of us liked them, quite honestly, back then, they were going against their medical doctor's advice, and with the ego that I had, that was really hard to swallow. It took me a couple of years to start reading about vaccines, and the moment I started reading research about vaccines, changed my life forever. I didn't know anything beyond the vaccine information statements, where we find out that vaccines are perfectly safe. You'll become immortal if you vaccinate, and if you don't, all the babies in the world will die. And that's what the CDC wants us to believe, and I understand why they say what they say. When I started reading vaccine inserts, I was blown away at what had been studied or not studied, at the numbers of kids that were studied. A study of 2,000 kids, and then we start vaccinating 4 to 8 to 12 million kids to see what happens. And it changed my life when I saw vaccines having a higher injury rate than what we expected. We had a brand new vaccine that would come out, and we'd start vaccinating kids, and instead of a 1 in a million reaction, we were seeing kids, you know, 1 in 100 being hospitalized, or having create special rules that if you received a vaccine, you had to lay on the table for 20 minutes because you might pass out as you were leaving our clinic. Really hard for me. I am embarrassed to admit that I was still a vaccine bully, that in my practice we needed certain vaccine rates and you couldn't question my authority, but then I started to make personal decisions for my own children where we wouldn't give my kids any new vaccine that had just been released. A silly rule at the time for what I know now, but I was never going to test vaccines on my kids again. And in 2007 or 2008, I forget, I experienced my first regression to autism with one of my patients. Now, you've all heard the same story, that they were born with autism and the doctor just didn't know that they had autism, and it's really hard to pick, no, that's not true. My background's in child development. I was working with kids with special needs. I had a perfectly normal child in my practice until they received his 12-month vaccines. When I walked into the room at a 17-month visit, I literally saw a child I'd never met before. I thought I walked into the wrong room. I stepped out to look to make sure I was in the right room because I did not recognize this child. He had regressed into autism, one of the saddest cases I've ever seen. And hard to admit that I struggled with recognizing that that really happened to my patient. I still know the child today. I'm working with him. He's doing well. But it opened up my eyes. That's when I started reading about vaccines. A few years later, we had a patient die after his shots. They called it a SIDS death at 2 in the afternoon, a few hours after his vaccines. I remember the discussion, and I don't want to violating confidentiality, so I'm going to be very careful with the words that I use. The coroner asked the ER doctor, do you think this was related to the vaccines that the child had earlier today? And the doctor said, well, no, it wouldn't have been the vaccines, implying, of course, that vaccines are perfectly safe, so it was marked as a SIDS death, and everybody moved on. That family has peace. It was SIDS. It was unavoidable. It was just a random bad event. But that's when I started reading about vaccines. And it led to a transition in who I am today. I also want to humble myself before you. I read about an hour a day about vaccines, and I work with moms in my practice that read 10 hours a day. They know more than I do, and that's amazing. And to all the medical doctors who are watching this, I'm sure they know more than you do. There are a handful of doctors in our country that know as much as these moms do, because once your child was injured by vaccines, you'll never stop researching it. I have all the stories in the world to share about patients in my practice, children who've been injured by vaccines and stopped vaccinating and working to recover, many, many, many healthy kids who have never had a vaccine, and some kids who are partially vaccinated. And doing this for 15 years now, I'll share with you that the vaccinated kids are the sickest, the partially vaccinated kids are not as sick, and the unvaccinated kids are the healthiest. Now, of course, bad things happen to kids. There are kids who are unvaccinated that still die. There are kids who are unvaccinated still get leukemia and asthma and allergies and eczema, regress to autism, have developmental delays, everything in between. But the disease rates and the illness rates are highest in the vaccinated children. I am a faith-based person. I want to share that with you, that I'm really stressed about end times for me when I have to answer to what I'm doing with kids. Did I do my job by vaccinating or supporting unvaccinated kids? I'm going to have to answer to that, because for what I've read, it's very hard to have peace with vaccinating children on the regular schedule. But let me share with you how I have peace, if that's okay with you.
Please do.
When children are vaccinated in our practice, they need a doctor who will recognize vaccine injury. And they're going to be vaccinated anyway, so I will watch them and I'll watch for the injury, and then we'll have that discussion. And if children are unvaccinated, they need a doctor who's been reading about vaccine-influenced diseases. I don't say preventable, I say influenced. They need a doctor who knows what this looks like and knows how to treat the illness itself. And everywhere in between, in my heart, families need informed consent. I'm part of a group called Physicians for Informed Consent. We believe that it's very important that families understand that for any medical procedure, there's a risk or there's a benefit. And with that risk or the benefit, we need to have a discussion. And you do not have informed consent when you read the vaccine information statement, and you certainly don't have informed consent once you get the vaccines and your nurse gives you the statement after the fact. You have informed consent when you have an open, honest discussion with somebody who's actually trained to have the discussion with you, then the family gets to make the decision. And after we chat, or after they chat with any one of our partners across the country, they choose to vaccinate, we're gonna love them, we're gonna pray for them, we're gonna hope that it goes okay. They choose not to vaccinate, we're going to love them, we're going to pray for them, we're going to hope that that goes okay. But at the end of the day, they had true informed consent. I would love nothing more to have safe vaccines. I think that would be amazing if we had safe vaccines, or even if we had accountability for vaccine injuries. There are three things that I need before I'm going to jump on the pro-vaccine bandwagon. Number one, we need to have accountability to the vaccine injury for for the vaccine industry for vaccine injuries, right? You need to be able to sue somebody if they hurt your kid. As the only industry in our country where you have no option for litigation if somebody's hurt, because correlation doesn't mean causation, you gotta be kidding me, right? Like, a kid falls over and they get a bloody nose. Yeah, they fell, they hit their nose, and their nose is bleeding. That was not correlation. We saw what happened, they got hurt. Vaccine injuries happen, whether it's immediately or years afterwards. We need to be able to hold people accountable. That's gonna drive safety. Now, that's not my medical training or my pediatrics training. That's my master's in business training. You have to hold markets accountable for injury. That's how you have safety. That's why we have safe products in our country as best we can, because you actually get to hold them accountable and sue them when they're not protecting our children. The second thing is, we need to study vaccinated versus unvaccinated kids. We have plenty of people who would volunteer for that study that are vaccinated, plenty of people who are unvaccinated. We need to study that. We need to have placebo-controlled studies so we can see what happens if I inject you with nothing compared to vaccines, and have that up front, not after the fact, where we're trying to figure out what happened to our children. Once we have those things, including long-term outcome studies, right, because some of the stuff happens years, not moments afterwards, once we have those, I promise you I'll be in the forefront of vaccinating children in our country, once we have full informed consent for the providers as well. Until that point, we have to have a discussion. If that makes me a bad doctor, call me a bad doctor. We need to save and support our children and our parents' rights to decide what they're going to inject.
imagine my whole world around you. I can remember hoping that you and I could make it on through.
The flu season is upon us. Which type will we worry about this year? And what kind of shots will we be told to take? Remember the swine flu scare of 1976? That was the year the U.S. government told us all that swine flu could turn out to be a killer that could spread across the nation. And Washington decided that every man, woman, and child in the nation should get a shot to prevent a nationwide outbreak, a pandemic. Well, 46 million of us obediently took the shot. And now 4,000 Americans are claiming damages from Uncle Sam amounting to $3.5 billion. Because of what happened when they took that shot. By far the greatest number of the claims, two-thirds of them, are for neurological damage or even death, allegedly triggered by the flu shot. We pick up the story back in 1976 when the threat posed by the swine flu virus seemed very real indeed.
This virus was the cause of a pandemic in 1918 and 1919 that resulted in over 500,000 deaths in the United States, as well as 20 million deaths around the world.
See how easy it is to...
Thus, the U.S. government's publicity machine was cranked into action to urge all America to protect itself against the swine flu menace.
Influenza is serious business. During major flu epidemics, millions of people are sick and thousands die. Well, this year you can get protection. The vaccines are safe, easy to take, and they can protect you against flu. So roll up your sleeve. Protect yourself.
One of those who did roll up her sleeve was Judy Roberts. She was perfectly healthy, an active woman, when in November of 1976, she took her shot. 2 weeks later, she says, she began to feel a numbness starting up her legs.
I joked about it at that time. I said, I'll be numb to the knees by Friday if this keeps up. By the following week, I was totally paralyzed.
So completely paralyzed, in fact, that they had to operate on her to enable her to breathe. And for 6 months, Judy Roberts was a quadriplegic. The diagnosis? A neurological disorder called Guillain-Barré syndrome, GBS for short. These neurological diseases are little understood. They affect people in different ways. As you can see in these home movies taken by a friend, Judy Roberts' paralysis confined her mostly to a wheelchair for over a year. But this disease can even kill. Indeed, there are 300 claims now pending from the families of GBS victims who died, allegedly as a result of the swine flu shot. In other GBS victims, the crippling effects diminish and all but disappear. But for Judy Roberts, progress back to good health has been painful and partial.
Now, I notice that your smile, Judy, is a little bit constricted.
Yes, it is.
Is it different from what it used to be?
Very different. I have a greatly decreased mobility in my lips, and I can't drink through a straw on the right-hand side. I can't blow out birthday candles. I don't whistle anymore, for which my husband is grateful.
It may be a little difficult for you to answer this question, but have you recovered as much as you are going to recover?
Yes, this is it.
So you will now have a legacy of braces on your legs for the rest of your life?
Yes. The weakness in my hands will stay, and the leg braces will stay.
So Judy Roberts and her husband have filed a claim against the U.S. government. They're asking $12 million, though they don't expect to get nearly that much.
Judy, why did you take the flu shot?
I'd never taken any other flu shots, but I felt like this was going to be a major epidemic. And the only way to prevent a major epidemic of a really deadly variety of flu was for everybody to be immunized.
Where did this so-called deadly variety of flu, where did it first hit back in 1976? It began right here at Fort Dix in New Jersey in January of that year when a number of recruits began to complain of respiratory ailments, something like the common cold. An Army doctor here sent samples of their throat cultures to the New Jersey Public Health Lab to find out just what kind of bug was going around here. One of those samples was from a Private David Lewis who had left his sickbed to go on a forced march. Private Lewis had collapsed on that march, and his sergeant had revived him by mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. But the sergeant showed no signs of illness. A few days later, Private Lewis died.
if this disease is so potentially fatal that it's going to kill a young, healthy man, a middle-aged school teacher doesn't have a prayer.
The New Jersey lab identified most of those soldiers' throat cultures as the normal kind of flu virus going around that year, but they could not make out what kind of virus was in the culture from the dead soldier and from four others who were sick. So they sent those cultures to the Federal Center for Disease Control in Atlanta, Georgia, for further study. A few days later, they got the verdict, swine flu. But that much publicized outbreak of swine flu at Fort Dix involved only Private Lewis, who died, and those four other soldiers who recovered completely without the swine flu shot.
If I had known at that time that the boy had been in a sick bed, got up, went out on a forced march, and then collapsed and died, I would never have taken a shot.
The rationale for our recommendation was not on the basis of the death of a single individual, but it was on the basis that when we do see a change in the characteristics of the influenza virus, it is a massive public health problem in this country.
Dr. David Sensor, then head of the CDC, the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta, is now in private industry. He devised the swine flu program, and he pushed it. You began to give flu shots to the American people in October of 76.
October 1st.
By that time, how many cases of swine flu around the world had been reported?
There had been several reported, but none confirmed. There had been cases in Australia that were reported by the press, by the news media. There were cases in...
None confirmed. Did you ever uncover any other outbreaks of swine flu anywhere in the world?
No.
Now, nearly everyone was to receive the shot in a public health facility where a doctor might not be present. Therefore, it was up to the CDC to come up with some kind of official consent form, giving the public all the information it needed about the swine flu shot. This form stated that the swine flu vaccine had been tested. What it didn't say was that after those tests were completed, the scientists developed another vaccine. And that was the one given to most of the 46 million who took the shot. That vaccine was called X-53A. Was X-53A ever field tested?
I can't say. I would have to...
It wasn't.
I don't know.
Well, I would think that you're in charge of the program.
I would have to check the records. I haven't looked at this in some time.
The information form, the consent form, was also supposed to warn people about any risks of serious complications following the shot. But did it?
No, I had never heard of any reactions other than a sore arm, fever, this sort of thing.
Judy Roberts' husband, Gene, also took the shot.
Yes, I looked at that document. I signed it. Nothing on there said I was going to have a heart attack or I'd get Guillain-Barré, which I never heard of.
What if people from the government, from the Center for Disease Control, what if they had indeed known about it? What would be your feeling?
They should have told us.
Did anyone ever come to you and say, you know something, fellas? There's the possibility of neurological damage if you get into a mass immunization program.
No.
No one ever did?
No.
Do you know Michael Hatwick?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Michael Hatwick directed the surveillance team for the swine flu program at the CDC. His job was to find out what possible complications could arise from taking the shot and to report his findings to those in charge. Did you know ahead of time, Dr. Hatwick, that there had been case reports of neurological disorders, neurological illness, apparently associated with the injection of influenza vaccine?
Absolutely.
You did?
Yes.
How'd you know that?
By review of the literature.
So you told your superiors, the men in charge of the swine flu immunization program, about the possibility of neurological disorders?
Absolutely.
What would you say if I told you that your superiors say that you never told them about the possibility of neurological complications?
That's nonsense. I can't believe that they would say that they did not know that there were neurological illnesses associated with influenza vaccination. That simply is not true. We did know that.
I've said that Dr. Hatwick had never told me of his feelings on this subject.
And he's lying.
I guess you would have to make that assumption.
Then why does this report from your own agency, dated July 1976, list neurological complications as a possibility.
I think the consensus of the scientific community was that the evidence relating neurologic disorders to influenza immunization was such that they did not feel that this association was a real one.
You didn't feel it was necessary to tell the people that information?
I think that over the years we have tried to inform the American people as fully as possible.
As part of informing Americans about the swine flu threat, Dr. Sensor's CDC also helped create the advertising to get the public to take the shot. Let me read to you from one of your own agency's memos planning the campaign to urge Americans to take the shot. The swine flu vaccine has been taken by many important persons, he wrote. Example, President Ford, Henry Kissinger, Elton John, Muhammad Ali, Mary Tyler Moore, Rudolf Nureyev, Walter Cronkite, Ralph Nader, Edward Kennedy, etc., etc. True?
I'm not familiar with that particular piece of paper, but I do know that at least of that group, President Ford did take the vaccination.
Did you talk to these people beforehand to find out if they planned to take the shot?
I did not know.
Did anybody?
I do not know.
Did you get permission to use their names in your campaign?
I do not know.
Mary, did you take a swine flu shot?
No, I did not.
Did you give them permission to use your name saying that you had or were going to?
Absolutely not. Never did.
Did you ask your own doctor about taking the swine flu shot?
Yes, and at the time he thought it might be a good idea. But I resisted it because I was leery of having the symptoms that sometimes go with that kind of inoculation.
So you didn't?
No, I didn't.
Have you spoken to your doctor since?
Yes.
And?
He's delighted that I didn't take that shot.
You're in charge. Somebody's in charge.
There are...
This is your advertising strategy that I have a copy of here.
Who's it signed by?
This one is unsigned. But you'll acknowledge that it was your baby, so to speak.
It could have been from the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare. It could be from CDC. I don't know. I'll be happy to take responsibility for it.
It's been 3 years now since you fell ill with GBS, right?
Right.
Has the federal government, in your estimation, played fair with you about your claim?
No, I don't think so. It seems to be dragging on and on and on, and really no end in sight that I can see at this point.
With respect to the cases of Guillain-Barré, allegedly...
Former Secretary of HEW Joseph Califano, too, was disturbed that there was no end in sight. So a year and a half ago, he promised that Uncle Sam would cut the bureaucratic red tape for victims suffering from GBS and would pay up quickly.
We shouldn't hold them to an impossible or too difficult standard of proving that they were hurt. Even if we pay a few people a few thousand dollars that might not have deserved it, I think justice requires that we promptly pay those people who do deserve it.
Who's making the decision to be so hard-nosed about settling?
Well, I assume the Justice Department is.
Griffin Bell, before he left?
Well, the Justice Department agreed to the statement I made. It was cleared word for word with the lawyers in the Justice Department by my HEW lawyers.
And that statement said, in effect?
That statement said that we should pay Guillain-Barré claims without regard to whether the federal government was negligent if they resulted from the swine flu shot.
I think the government knows it's wrong.
If it drags out long enough, that people will just give up. Let it go.
I am a little more adamant in my thoughts than my wife is, because told Judy to take the shot. She wasn't going to take it, and she never had shots. And I'm mad with my government because they knew the facts, but they didn't release those facts because if they had released them, the people wouldn't have taken. And they can come out tomorrow and tell me there's going to be an epidemic, and they can drop off like flies to Mexico. I will not take another shot that my government tells me to take.
Meantime, Judy Roberts and some 4,000 others like her are still waiting for their day in court.
Please share this program. The more you share, the more people hear there is another side other than the official story, the more we can help protect people by having them be informed, so they can engage in a more enlightened freedom of choice. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.